This is a podcast from Minute Media.
After Dark, a podcast about the CW's Riverdale that just wants to make a little deal with you. No big deal. I'm Alex.
When you walk into a diner looking for a little plate of eggs, just remember every diner manager in every town in this country has made their own deal with their own devil. I'm Justin.
Hey, I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Riverdale Season 6, Episode 3, Chapter 98, Mr. Cypher. Now, we are by Cypher. The end of the set. Cypher. Yes, my favorite X-Men character. Is that who you're pointing out, Pete? Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. It's good. That seems very related to the episode, too. So, to give you a little bit of a recap here, we are now more than halfway through the five-episode Rivervale event, which finds the characters we know and love in the middle of a dark, disturbing alternate universe where the supernatural is real. In the first episode, Archie Andrews was sacrificed
still
to the
dead.
Old gods to bring back the Mabel
Cheese. Does anybody miss him? Still dead.
Anybody he's still dead. Referenced. Also, not anybody, even referenced. Yeah, nobody mentions him even.
Not even
this
a
point.
Little bit.
And last episode, Tony Topaz sacrificed herself to save the town, as well as her baby Anthony, from La Llorona, the water ghost. Did I do it?
Just like a fine wine, your pronunciation of that is
Why
really
would you go
developing.
Back into that fire? We escaped
Don't even
that fire.
Try.
We were away from it. It was
water ghost. She saved her baby from water ghost. And that also doesn't get referenced this episode. In fact, of course, Tony is off screen, but also Cheryl is off screen the entire time. But to bring you up to speed on the remaining characters in Rivervale, Jughead and Tabitha are living together. Jughead has created his own newspaper at the school that is going to tell the truth about everything. Tabitha is working at Pops now with Pop himself. He has returned from retirement in Florida to help her out, which is very nice. Everybody loves Pop, so it's good to see him back again. Reggie and Veronica are dating and wheeling and dealing literally in this episode, and they've been working to create a casino, not with the approval of the new board of Riverdale, the incorporated town of Riverdale, I guess, which is comprised of Alice, I guess, R.I.P. Tony, Tabitha, and Frank, who also doesn't show up this episode. Alice in particular shot down the idea for a casino, and then Reggie and Veronica said, we're going to do it anyway. And that pays off this episode in a very big way. That's sort of the central thing going on here. And last but not least, Betty has been tangling since the time jump with a serial killer called the Trash Bag Killer, a.k.a. TBK, a.k.a. the Burger King. And he chopped up people, put them in trash bags. She is now an FBI agent in both Riverdale and Rivervale. She was also, and this is, I have questions about this, she was dating a guy named Glenn, who she was working with, who was her superior. They had a falling
Where's
out because he was kind of a jerk. And he is,
Where's...
I believe, yeah, he's taking care of her cat, Toffee, as far as we know, who also, again, doesn't get referenced in this episode, which is very weird.
No, don't they reference Toffee.
Burn it.
They were like, when the woman calls and says, hey, have you seen Glenn? His wife, a cat named Toffee, is looking for him.
Oh, okay. He spent so much time with Toffee, he married.
He married the cat. It's obvious. Okay. Is that not clear to anyone else?
That was not clear. No.
When he showed up, he was covered in cat hair because he's
been... was that sound in the background, I remember, that sounded like a cat in a cat briefcase.
Is it too hard in post for somebody to just casually walk by and just, the cat's fine? You know what I mean? Like, just give us something.
You want a random voice to say cats fine?
Put a title card up. I don't care at this point. But this is too much.
Just in the middle of other scenes.
That's a piece of news.
Cat fine. Just, yeah.
Before we move on, though, Alex did say the words cat briefcase, and I just owe it to everyone to just explain once again what that is. A cat briefcase is a briefcase that holds a cat, and at one end there's food, and at the other end there's a litter box, so that the cat can live in a contained environment.
And I believe you pitched this by Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, the showrunner of Riverdale on our podcast.
Why would you pitch it to him?
And he approved it. He said it's canonical. I'm not going to listen back to what he said, but it's canonical.
Why would you?
He said it exists in the show, and we have actually started an online business selling cat briefcases. The hard part, legal.
Where's the vents? There's got to be a lot of vents in there. Otherwise,
yeah, there's a vent up top, and let me be honest, keep your nose away from that vent. It smells bad.
One vent up top.
It's up at the top by the handle. Here's the legal hurdle we're encountering is making sure that people put the cat in the right way. You put it in backwards, it's eating kitty litter and pooping on food. And yeah, you
that's your
that.
Slogan, right? Don't put the cat in backwards! Exclamation point.
Wait, cats it's so
food.
Skinny the cat can't move at all?
Cats are skinny.
They are skinny. God. They can get under doors and stuff. What they flatten out their skull and spine and whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, Roberto's leaving the show to focus on the business, so no worries.
And that's where the phrase flat as a cat comes from. So let's move on with the rest of the show.
Make it
so much
a little
stuff.
Wider for the cats, man. Come on, dude. This sounds just inhumane.
It's starting to sound like Pete is all in on this now. I got
He's coming around. And let's remember Pete's pitch. He wants, and he's a great businessman, he wants to put a title card in the middle of Rivervale that says Cats Fine on it. Cats Fine.
Maybe instead of the Rivervale title card, Cats Fine.
Cats
that
Fine.
Comes up.
Yeah, yeah.
Right after the first 10 minutes. So just broadly, I wanted to say, I think this is the first episode of Rivervale where I was all into it at the beginning. I've enjoyed the previous episodes, but I think purposefully the way that they built it, the first episode, you're like, what's going on here? I'm not totally familiar with this world. The second episode, everybody's like, what's this about ghosts? What's happening? And this is the first episode where everybody was like, yeah, devil's real. It's cool. let's move on from here. I love that. Like, it was just so much more fun in this episode to just be all in on the wildness of the supernatural world. I thought it was great.
I agree. Great episode. This is my favorite of the three so far that we've seen. This one felt the cleanest. The characters were getting to be just great versions of themselves.
Reggie was
so funny in this episode, just being like, babe, it's fine. I just sold your soul. We're cool, right? Like, all that stuff was so fun. Jughead reacting to Jughead. The infinite Jughead loop that we saw here was great.
God. Too much.
Just a great episode. And also shot really well. The scary moments with the devil's true face showed a couple times were great. The devil putting his hand almost on Alice's shoulder in the scene with Veronica, just really beautifully made. I thought this was a great episode.
Yeah. Pete, how are you feeling about this?
I agree with a lot of the shots, and like the kind of person who played the devil was really good. Yeah, there was a lot of really fun moments, but, I didn't – the Betty stuff, she kind of was off on her own a lot of it, and, she was pushed. You know what I mean? She was kind of pushed. So, I did think that by the third thing of this, you're like, we're in a rhythm now of like, okay, this is what's going on. Anybody can die. The Kevin part was just, it hurt. You know what I mean? Like the poor Kevin, just like immediately signing, like immediately going for it. And the kind of Finn Fangs thing was really funny.
Do you think they have a triplet named Foom? I think so.
Definitely.
So close.
Let's talk about this individually by storyline, because again, they actually weave really nicely with each other, even though they are on these separate trains. But I think we can talk about them each separately in turn. And just a little note, the actor who plays Lou Cipher is named Oliver Rice. He's been on a lot of different stuff in Canada in particular. I thought it was an interesting choice to not have Lucifer from Sabrina, but... Yeah. Still fun actor. I thought he did a great job, and he was in almost every scene. So that was pretty cool.
He was great.
Why don't we start with the Betty stuff? Because that is probably the most minimal footprint of the episode, but most maximum footprint in Pete's heart.
Yeah, oh, wow. Take it easy.
I was getting there.
Don't minimize Betty like that.
So in this storyline, Betty gets a call from Glenn telling her that the trash bag killer has been taken to Rivervale, and they want an interrogation to find out where his victims were. They want a confession from him. It turns out it's not actually him at all. It's actually the devil masquerading as him. And over the course of the storyline, we get to hear Hal Cooper is in hell, Polly is in hell, and then ultimately the devil lured Glenn there, dressed him up as the trash bag killer. Betty kills him with a scissor and buries him under the floorboards, Edgar Allan Poe style. So what did you think about this arc for Betty? Pete, you seem pretty emotionally affected by it.
Well, yeah, I felt like it was, you know, Betty was kind of lured into this trap and, you know, like, you know, you think she has the upper hand at one point because she gets the call from, quote unquote, the real Glenn, where he's like, if there's no investigation, we don't know, you know, what you're talking about. So then she kind of goes back in. And you keep waiting for her to be like, you know, pull the kind of thing off of it. But she plays along and you think she's playing along. And then it's kind of flipped on her when she realizes, oh, this is the devil. This is like a lot bigger than I thought. I'm in trouble here.
Well, I mean, the real takeaway is Betty is evil here.
Whoa. Right? No.
I think that's what she thinks. Mm-hmm. She kills Glenn. And then covers it up.
She was forced to kill Glenn.
Well, I think this is
forced.
I mean, she was kind of pushed into a corner, and you know what they say about babies in a corner. You can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Always put the baby in.
To your point, Justin, I think this is one of the pleasures of this Rivervale event is they're able to take the characters to places they can't take them in regular Riverdale. And Betty always has this line that she's not going to cross, that she skirts up against. She's always wondered about her darkness. Does she have the serial killer gene in her? Can she kill somebody? Obviously, she killed her first cat. We don't know what's going on with Toffee. We won't get into that again. Here, she does cross that line for the first time. She's told she's evil, and it pushes her to do something evil. And that's what she's dealing with at the end of the episode. It'll be interesting to see how much of that goes into the next episode, because we've also seen a separation in terms of the plot, almost anthology style from episode to episode here. But certainly I think that's what they're doing here is pushing Betty past the point she normally can go.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. And we did see her have a pretty strong hand in killing Archie recently. So I do think this was that feels pretty much like not a confirmation that she's evil, but this is what she's grappling with here is the actual evilness.
And this is also something that I want to clarify, since I've seen a lot of discussion about this online. The way that I'm thinking about this, this is Rivervale Betty. This is not Riverdale Betty. They are two characters in two alternate universes, and they share a lot of characteristics. But I feel like, for example, last episode, there was a lot of discussion about the Jughead-Tabitha fight, and they're like, ooh, this relationship's really toxic. It's like, no, it isn't toxic. They were possessed by ghosts. That's what's going on here. So all of this stuff is pushing that stuff to the extreme. And you can look at those character traits for these characters in Rivervale, but understand that's not the full picture of who they are as characters going forward through the rest of season six. It's just part of them.
Do you feel like you're in an alternate crazy dimension when you're arguing that stuff online, or how you
A little bit.
Just want to check in.
Are you evil?
Am I evil?
Is this confirmation that you're evil as well? The fact that you're on there murdering other people's opinions?
Oh. Yeah.
Does anybody want me? I can channel people from hell if you guys want to. Just real quick. Just sort of lay my head down a little bit and be like, oh, Betty, pretty Betty.
Please stop.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Thank you. Please stop.
Thanks so much.
I know you could never be a killer, not for the moral part, because you could easily kill. It's just messy. And the garbage bags.
Exactly. There's too much cleanup, honestly. It's the same thing with Thanksgiving. That's why I don't do Thanksgiving. But I do. I should mention, if anybody is interested, I dress up as the trash bag killer, and I go to Times Square, and I take pictures with people, if anybody wants to check it out.
Very niche.
How much do you charge for the pictures?
$5.
Oh, okay.
I
just run around in a trash bag killer costume, no shirt on, grabbing people's babies and demanding $5. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
That counts.
No, that's low-key because the stuff that's actually happening in
Times
Square.
Hey, don't talk to me about Loki. He keeps stealing my business in Times Square, okay? That guy's an asshole.
Wow.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think Trash Bag Killer is going to continue on past the Rivervale event, and that's going to be a thing?
I hope not.
And if so, I mean, this is sort of a way of saying that Glenn, because we've speculated that Glenn is the Trash Bag Killer. There's no other character that makes sense to be the Trash Bag Killer besides Glenn.
It could be Toffee at this point.
Exactly.
I would rock revenge for being ignored for this long, and if it's not the cat, I would be surprised.
I think it could go either way to answer what you're actually asking, Justin. I was a little confused about the continuity of what was going on here, and I understand the devil's involved, so there's trickery and whatever else, but TBK was there, and then Glenn called and was back at his office, and we saw him in his office, and then he was also TBK, and then he was under the floorboard. So my assumption is that Glenn in Rivervale Glenn was killed and stuffed under the floorboards by Betty, but I don't know when he got there. Presumably after Betty talked to him on the phone in her bedroom.
Yeah, I think we're doing some devil trickery here.
Okay.
To make that happen.
But to your point, I think this is either, yes, confirmation that Glenn is TBK, and I think we will see TBK more in season six, the real TBK, or that he's not because they're telling us he is.
Oh, wow. Nice. So you're saying he either is or is not?
What just happened? Wow.
What a revelation.
Should
tweet that.
Oh, God.
Riverdale theory. I don't know.
I don't know.
Riverdale theory. Something's going to happen.
Or not.
Or maybe not.
Will 42 minutes of things happen on next week's episode? Let's find out.
Let's find out.
What do you think, Justin?
I think we could let Trashbag Killer go after this. Because it feels like, to me, to go back into it and be like, still, like when Betty has now killed him and Glenn, that ties it up. And we're going to go back and have that be an ongoing thing.
Nice little trash bag.
Nice little trash bag. It's neat. It's clean. All the blood is mopped up and off we go. I'm ready to let it go because Betty's going to have to do more stuff like kiss Archie. So,
oh, but he's also dead. If Glenn's dead, then Archie's dead. They're all dead.
I guess we will see or not see or see or not see.
All right. So that's Betty's storyline. We can touch on other things later on as we go back through it. Why don't we talk about Jughead interviewing the devil?
Yes. Oh, this one
so much
was fun.
Ah, so good. So Jughead finding out that the devil is real from Tabitha, we'll jump back to Tabitha in a second here, he immediately gets the idea to interview the devil for his school newspaper that he works at. And
School newspaper.
Yes, but the devil makes a deal with him. He basically says, okay, you can publish this and you'll never write a word again, or I will tell you my whole story. You can keep it to yourself for the rest of your life. You'll be able to write beautiful, beautiful words, but you'll never publish anything again. So either way, he's dead in the water as a writer. But ultimately what Jughead chooses, he finds out the truths of the universe, publishes them in the newspaper, becomes instantly
famous.
Yeah,
the look on his face after the interview was hysterical.
Great. Cole Sprouse in this whole episode was fantastic and so much fun.
Honestly,
he chooses to sell his soul, so the devil still gets what he wants at the end of the episode.
Classic.
Go ahead, Justin.
I'm going to say I want him doing live narration, on-camera narration in every episode. I think it's so fun. It ties the episodes up really, in a really nice way. I would see it, especially in this moment, like I said earlier, when we get to see Jughead, the narrator, reacting to Jughead in the scene. That was so fun.
Well, what did you think about that moment? Beyond it being fun, there's been a lot of speculation about a multiverse of Jugheads, and we know that episode 100, the title of it is The Jughead Paradox. So I almost expected the scene for Jughead at the typewriter to turn back and do like the Fleabag thing of, wait, who are you? What's going on here?
Yeah.
I think we're going to get that.
I was going to say that feels like the fifth episode. Because something like this, then on the last episode, that's when you break the machine that you've built that is Rivervale. And I think we can call out all of that stuff. When this show's gone so crazy and so through the looking glass, literally, that I think in that fifth episode we're going to go all the way.
Yeah, but in the next episode we're going to get Sabrina, right?
Yes. Next episode is Sabrina. Cheryl is apparently in every scene of the next episode, and we're going to go back in time and explore the Blossom family through stories with Nana Blossom as she lies on her deathbed or something like that. And Sabrina, ostensibly, I think, is coming to help save Nana Rose from whatever curse she's under. Should be pretty fun.
You mean the curse of just being wicked old?
No, I don't know. She swallowed a lot of water last episode after Rorona came in.
Why would you? Nope. No, why would you do that?
That's like the, you know, how it's like rolling an R? You're doing like the R, you're like eating it. You're like swallowing it.
Well, that's what, when I go to a restaurant, I always order a Corona.
Oh my God. What is happening? This is the worst.
Wow. That's the least sexual rolled R I've ever heard. Jughead, this whole thing of him, like, first off, the fact that the AP calls like, hey, you run a school newspaper. Could I publish your interview with the devil story? Super fun. Wild idea.
Yeah. Wait, I wanted to read off. I forgot where I wrote it down. But the whole thing, he was like, you may know him as Lucifer, the Lord of Flies. That was the subhead for the thing. It was very funny. My favorite thing was Sam Pansky calling up. And he's like,
Hot dog agent.
Doesn't ask about hot dogs, but is like, because I'm me, what are you writing next? The pages.
Give me the pages. Great. He was eating a hot dog. I guarantee that.
Oh, 100%. Unless that was also the devil, which is possible. But that whole sequence was great. I loved Jughead's smile when ultimately he writes at the end and he writes down Jughead Jones is damned for all eternity. Great. What did you think about, there was a lot of discussion about this online. What did you think about the typewriter being back together? Literally,
I love the duct tape on the typewriter. It's so fun. Yeah. But I mean,
right down the middle of it, because that's how you would fix it.
If I'm Tabitha, that's concerning from a love standpoint.
Because he's in love with the typewriter.
Exactly. I mean, that would make a lot of sense.
Well, he does say if he's not a writer, he's nothing. So. He's going to need that typewriter.
That's right. Or a laptop. If I can't suggest any harder to get that dude a laptop.
It was kind of amazing that he was able to upload the interview with the devil from his typewriter. That was pretty cool, though.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. So that storyline was pretty fun. Why don't we move on to the Tabitha one while we're touching on the whole Jabitha of it all. So this one, Pop has a heart attack after seeing the devil, gets sent to the hospital.
As you do.
And it turns out that his grandfather, I believe, made a deal with the devil that got passed down. Or was it his father? It was his father.
It was his father. It was
right, okay.
Before we move off of Jughead, I know we already have, but what would you do with that deal? The deal of write forever in obscurity or create, whatever you want to say, or publish once and then never again. Find fame but never be able to practice your art again.
I mean, I'll give my real answer, and then I'll think about this for a second while Pete answers, because I was definitely thinking about this during the episode. I would simply not take that deal, because there is no way you're getting out of that with your soul intact. I'd just be like, no, I'm good. Don't tell me your story.
Continue your philosophy of either doing something or not doing something. You're going to choose to not do it.
Well, that's the thing. They were like, okay, let's talk about options. And he just threw out two, and he was cool with it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, let's throw some back. Like, see what other things you can do. Like, let's say I publish your thing, but then I can write one thing after,
so you know, like maybe negotiate.
just one more good thing, and then I can retire off of that. You know what I mean?
Right. I would still publish because I would publish ultimately. Like I would do that because I could still podcast. You know, that's not writing. Still true. Create.
All that money in podcasting, you would just kind of just.
Do you think Jughead could still text? Well, you think, or is that considered?
Hey, what's up, Jabitha? And it's like, blah, 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 blah.
She's like, Jughead's thinking of me.
Yeah, well, that should be part of the negotiations. Like, I should be able to still text.
Can I text? Can I write short poems? Or
Can I write dirty limericks?
That's more of a real punishment, is to only being able to write dirty limericks for the rest of your life.
What would you choose?
I would definitely do continue on in obscurity. I take pleasure in the craft.
Oh, boy. All right. I take the money.
Nice.
Take the money. Or you can see what's behind door number three.
Exactly.
Sucker. You choose door number three.
Obviously,
every
you
time.
Say, no deal, devil, get away from me. That's
no. You don't want to hear the devil's story? He's talked about where he grew up.
I don't know. Well, I've been hearing it my whole life. Come on. Yeah, there's the Bible. I'm good.
Oh, you know, the devil has
throw the Bible the cliff notes. Okay?
You're gonna throw the Bible at the devil.
Excuse me, sir. I know your story. Snake. You're the snake guy.
Hit him in the chest with the Bible.
Yeah. You want to hear about the snake time. Anyway, I thought it was funny. Jughead's barely a writer anyway, so the fact that he was like, oh no, I write gobbledygook, it's like, okay, you spend half the time complaining about having writer's block or writing something your friend did.
Hey, come on, man.
Yeah, you don't need the devil for that, Jughead. Moving back to Tabitha, though. So one of the interesting thing about this storyline is this pretty much canonizes a story that we've talked about a bunch on the podcast. Riverdale number 6, published by Archie Comics, was an anthology story that told a couple of short tales set in Pops. And one of them had this story where Pop's dad sold his soul to the devil, and the devil comes, made a deal with the devil, and the devil comes in and has burgers every once in a while. So very fun to see them work that stuff into here, though, albeit I think there were like a couple of details slightly changed, but still very, very fun. If you want to check that out, Riverdale number 6, or I think it's collected in the second volume of Riverdale from Archie Comics. But ultimately, Tabitha, because she's so nice and Pop is so nice, they went over, they have a special visitor who comes to Pops. Pete, you must have been stoked about this. One of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comes and saves
Raphael,
the day.
Raphael, yeah.
That was so cool.
Cool but rude.
Yeah.
That was
Heaven's
awesome.
Own Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And I loved that was a really good disguise. Like, normally the turtles' disguises are not very good. They're like hats and fedoras, but here you could barely tell he was a turtle.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it was obvious when he kept saying cowabunga, though, right?
And he ordered the pizza.
Yeah. Super obvious.
Well, have the pizza, dude. I'm your guardian angel. Take these tears of the Virgin Mary and, you know, put them in the milkshake.
As for one last milkshake, won't be able to resist. Come on.
I love being an angel. So, yes, this angel gives them the tears of the Virgin Mary, which they use to trick the devil, kick him out,
man.
And consecrate Pops to get ready for the final battle between good and evil, which does seem like something that is going to pad out somehow over these next two episodes. I guess we'll have to see how that happens. But I thought this was very fun, and it was nice to see Tabitha have a storyline where she's not like, I'm just all about supporting Jughead, or I'm all about supporting Betty. And granted, she was helping out Pop here, but it was also very much her on her own, doing her thing, and I thought that was great.
Yeah, I also really liked how there was this idea of Pops as the soul of Riverdale, or Riverdale. Yeah. I think that's a cool...
You crying? Peter, are you crying?
No, I just think it's
are you
a
crying
cool,
milkshakes?
Yeah.
Crying milkshake, dear.
We just got one more. Just one last milkshake. Yeah, I think that I really agree with that, and I also like the use of Pops in this episode. And yeah, I just think it was a good kind of storyline for Tabitha and a fun just kind of exploration of how great Pops' milkshakes are. You know what I mean?
Yes. Good devil approved. Yeah. I thought this was great too. Tabitha is really starting to become a power player in the Riverdale television experience. She's the only one that beats the devil. She gets to...
Veronica. Veronica kind of beats the devil.
No, Veronica becomes in service to the devil.
Yeah.
Which she seems happy about.
She's like, yeah, just one soul a week. I was like, damn, a week?
That's a lot of
souls.
That's a lot. Come on. Like,
yeah,
come
on. That's basically as many people as live in Rivervale, probably.
Yeah. It's going to be getting down to it. She's like, hey, Jughead, you want to come gamble?
Yeah, that's going to get tight quick. Yeah.
But I do think Tabitha, she actually defeats, her and Pop defeat the devil, kick him out the front door, rub the Jesus juice on the door, making it like nice. It's good stuff.
Yeah, rubbing that Jesus juice. Love it so much.
I do like how Pop threw the devil out like old school style. Like, you get out of here. Yeah.
He threw the devil out like DJ Jazzy Jeff flew out of the the house in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, which I thought was cool, too. Now, did you, when they were like, it's either the diner or your soul, I was like, diner, dude, get that diner out there.
Wait, what do you mean?
I'm saying.
Then you can't have one last milkshake, though, if you get rid of the diner.
I thought it was the deal was they were like, the soul, it being the soul of Rivervale, and that's why the devil wants it to burn it to the ground. I thought that was such an interesting deal. I liked the way they played it, because out of the gate, when the devil was like, it's either the diner or your soul, I was like, I feel like I'm ready to give up the diner business.
Yes.
Well, that's what Tabitha was saying. She was like, yeah, no problem, the diner.
Well, how, on that note, how do you think, what's your speculation about how this potentially is going to play out, given that Pops is the soul of Rivervale. There's going to be some sort of battle between good and evil. Again, we don't know if it's going to happen next week or in the fifth episode or maybe even further down the line potentially. But what does that mean? Does that mean the good folks hanging out in Pops and the bad folks going to Thornhill or something, or the casino, I guess?
Yeah, I think the final battle will be at Pops, which makes a lot of sense even without this episode as sort of the hub of where the gang hangs out and where they will make their stand.
Yeah. Against what, though? Is it against Mr. Cypher? Is it against something else?
I think it's going to be everybody versus Cheryl.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
I feel like that's what we've been setting up to finally erase the sins that have come before.
Yeah, interesting. I guess we'll have to see what happens with that. Why don't we move over and talk about Veronica and Reggie's storyline, excuse me, because that's the big bulk of the episode. But actually just as a quick little bit of setup, they finally open up their casino, the Babylonium Casino. Alice does not like it at all. She thinks it's a hell.
And is this, real quick, just so I know, is this underneath? Like, how many layers below Pops is this casino?
They don't specify.
Okay, because I'm just wondering, you know, because the devil shows up, so it's got to be down there. You know what I mean?
I did.
I had a similar note where I was like, well, surely, I know they are opening a casino, but surely there's an extra casino out back that they're also running.
I loved how big this set was. Like, I don't know if they built it out at a soundstage or if it was digital effects or exactly how they worked it, but it's the sort of thing of like, normally you have one story on these things and that's pretty much it. Here, it felt big. It felt like a casino. That's hard to do. So however or wherever they shot this, I thought it was very fun. The thing I wanted to touch on very briefly, though, is Kevin's storyline, once again, is very side to everything that's going on. But as Pete mentioned earlier, Kevin is already performing at the casino and then sells his soul away to perform at the casino, which is kind of a bad deal.
And to get fangs back. And to be fangs.
But he doesn't get fangs. Not he gets fangs. Finn.
Finn.
Yes. But that was very funny.
It depends on what people are into. It could be a douchier version of fangs.
He seemed up for whatever. Way. First of all, it's a shaved fang, so that's pretty nice. And then,
gross terminology.
What is a shaved fang?
I'll have a shaved fang, please.
But Finn is his manager, and also they go back to the champagne room to have really great sex every night. So Kevin's all into that. Also, he gets to perform It's Not Unusual on stage, and everybody loves it.
Really brings another level to that song, you know?
Mm-hmm. And Veronica,
what do you mean?
I was going to blast past that.
But I have two questions, Pete. What is the first level of It's Not Unusual? And then what is the additional level that you think Kevin's performance is?
Well, because he sold his soul. So it's kind of like this, he's trapped in this song and there's the line in it where he's like, you know, what, we're going to die. You know, there was like another meaning to it.
The song is about being in love, I believe. That's also...
It's kind of being about trapped when Kevin's singing it there in death.
Okay. I'm sorry. You're failing my class if that's your book report on that song. Just a tip out of this Kevin sequence. If you get presented a contract by anyone and it's mostly a picture, don't sign that contract.
If it's just a
contracts
still.
Famously not a lot of artwork on them. Mm-hmm. If you see a real pretty contract, someone's trying to screw you.
Whenever I do a contract for anybody, I write it in Wingdings, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, it's because you've been cursed by the same thing that Jughead has. Yeah, so you can only write in Wingdings.
Yeah, this is, I'm famous enough to be on a Riverdale, moderately successful Riverdale podcast.
Thank you for saying moderately. Keeping it real.
I don't know what a Wingding is, so I'm not sure what we're talking about.
It's like a very saucy wing.
It's the biggest insult. You Wingding.
Hey, Wingding.
Hey, what a bunch of Wingdings in here. That's like an insult from a person. I used to work construction. It was like, hey, you Wingdings, get back to work. It's like, whoa, ease up with the language.
The other thing about the Kevin thing, though, is I've had this theory based on barely anything that like Kevin Sanskrit is behind.
Wingding.
Mm-hmm. Very similar, actually. You got it right. Okay. That Kevin is behind everything somehow, mostly because he hasn't had any lines the past couple of episodes. I think this episode conclusively proves that that's not accurate.
No, your shooting from the hip Kevin theory is not
100% wrong. Absolutely. Yeah. But moving on to the Veronica Reggie stuff. So
he did get some to rock some fun outfits, though. I mean, his performance outfit and the blue tie, you know, he was looking sharp. So at least when he was selling his soul, he got
it. It was a fun outfit. I just want more for Kevin. Like,
sure.
Everybody else is having so much fun. It was great to hear him sing. It was a good performance. Very fun. But everybody gets more time than Kevin. Fags even got a funnier line than Kevin in this episode, I think. So it's a bummer. I just want more for him. But Veronica and Reggie, so Veronica is opening up the casino. She's going head-to-head with Alice in this episode, who is, in a very funny way, pushed into the sort of temperance role here, which I thought was really enjoyable. But Reggie is all in on that crime life at the casino, to the point that he sold not his soul, but Veronica's soul for a bunch of money to finish the casino, didn't tell her. And ultimately, by the end of the episode, after various performances and finagling, Veronica ends up making this deal we mentioned for a soul a week. And the first soul is Reggie's, and he gets sucked into hell. But along the way, we also get to see Nick Sinclair sucked into hell. So that was a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, that was fun. But it was also like, I liked the way they kind of like started. Well, it was like her talking about how legit things are and then him talking about how crooked things are.
That back was and such forth a great was, bit yeah, sequence.
That was really enjoyable. I mean, it was sad to see them fall apart. And it was, you know, I was kind of disappointed in Reggie. But it kind of explains why Reggie's been acting so weird. Like when you look back, it was like he got that backing of the money, and afterwards he kind of was acting really weird towards Veronica. So
you think that was something that was happening in the background in previous episodes?
Exactly. Yeah,
I don't.
Definitely was.
I really don't think a lot of the actions from the previous episodes connect to these episodes. Otherwise, for example, somebody might mention that Tony turned into a ghost, and Betty has her baby now, maybe, or Fags does, unclear. There's a lot of things that, again, I think are like this anthology structure. So I appreciate you making those connections, but I don't think they necessarily connect.
Do you think, though, that like at some point, like even maybe like a janitor walking by could just be like, hey, R2 was cool. You know what I mean? Like just a little like, you know.
What about a title card?
Just a title card would be good. Archie Cat's cool. Fine. Archie cool. Archie cool? Question mark?
Yeah.
Unclear. Jury's still out on that one.
I thought this storyline was just super fun across the board. And I got to say up top, it was great. Despite the fact that Reggie had sold his love's soul, I thought the man-Monica relationship is strong.
How can you say that after this?
At the beginning, I was like, this couple's working.
At the beginning,
This couple's working. And honestly, throughout, once Veronica finds out that he sold her soul, he's like, babe, I'm sorry, but I'll see you for dinner, though. Like, they're still cool.
Yeah.
And also, it's hard to come back. It's hard to come back from that. I've been there. I've sold a couple of old girlfriend's souls over 9 years.
Wait,
so,
what?
You know, I've been... This happens. You get into a mix. That's how I know don't sign a picture contract. Because signed a bunch of them, to
this
be honest.
This is a hell of a thing to admit on a podcast.
A hell of a thing.
Once you sell a soul, it's hard to, like, have that not really be a big part of the relationship, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to affect the relationship.
It comes up in conversation a lot, I understand. Yeah, yeah. I agree with you, though. They were very fun in this episode. It was wild how much Veronica was sticking by him throughout this, but
yeah,
she was fantastic, yeah. And I love the exchange where Veronica, Reggie
you
says...
You can trick the devil, right?
Yeah, if anybody can beat the devil, you can. And she's like, yeah, I guess I could.
Yeah, I guess yeah. You're right.
Fine, and she is right.
Yeah.
It's great. Again, like with the Tabitha stuff, it's nice to see them pay Veronica her due, because first episode, she was very much like, ooh, I'm frustrated with Reggie. I guess I'll hit Archie with this rock. And it became a lot about them. The second episode, she was very, I don't even know what she was doing necessarily. But here, this is like we were talking about with Betty, an expansion on the character Veronica, where she is this badass boss. And that's exactly what she shows here, tricking the devil, working with him ultimately, and like also, you pointed out, Justin, enjoying it by the end.
Yeah, yeah. And also went to one last number, you know, mm-hmm. Speaking of a boss, it was a great performance, you know.
Just, yeah, what was that? Marry the Night by Lady Gaga.
That was so funny. The way it was edited, it felt like she performed for one full hour, performed that song for so long. They kept cutting back to her being like, still dancing, marry the night.
Yeah. I love that. I loved everybody wearing the little devil horns during the dance, her backup dancers. Very, very fun. What else did you think about the storyline? What other moments jumped out to you?
Well, let's talk about the Nick St. Clair stuff. So that was very funny, that whole thing. The fact that he's Senator St. Clair was fun. And then when she's like, tell me your sins, just to turn me on. And he's like, drink and drive a lot. Three hit and runs. Unnecessary.
Somebody take that guy's car away. I mean, come on.
I was very trepidatious about Nick St. Clair coming back because he's such an absolutely gross character who never needs to be on the show. But by making him the worst human being alive and straight up, I thought that was a very fun way to bring him back into the mix.
Yeah, because I know you saw that picture a couple weeks ago or last week with Nick St. Clair, and you were like, why would they bring him back? And I think they nailed it. This is the perfect way to bring him back without it being...
Well, it was that kind of like... Oh yeah, I'll make a deal. Don't worry, I'll offer you somebody who deserves it. And you're like, who could that be? And then it was like, oh,
Nick St. Clair. And I love the twist there too. I thought that was really nicely done when they're toasting right afterwards, and he says, I'll be back tomorrow. And her being like, what are you talking about? That was great. I didn't see that coming, but it made a lot of sense, and it worked really well for Reggie, for the place that he's at, like you're talking about. There's, I think when she comes in right after that, he's like, oh crap.
That moment where he's like, oh shit, it's her. Yeah, like, yeah, and she comes storming through. That was great.
And I think just to talk about that for a second, I feel like this show in Rivervale, especially this episode, is just at peak fun. I'm curious how it's going to feel to go back to Riverdale after this event is over.
Oh, I can't wait.
Because clearly everyone who works on the show is having an absolute blast doing this. I wonder how they're going to be able to translate that fun energy over to more like canonical. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. This is in canon, but like more of our sort of regular Riverdale.
It's going to be like a warm blanket.
The thing that I was thinking about, and I don't know why it was this shot in particular that jumped out to me, but I love the shot of Betty on her rocking chair and just the creak back and forth as she's sitting in the fire. I thought that was really nice, just her nervousness and how tense she is. But that to me felt like, this is a moment that could happen in regular Riverdale and everybody would be like, what is happening? But here it's totally consistent with the rest of the episode. Like, That's why I feel okay with the rest of the season is we're going to get those things, but you're also going to have more grounded things happening as well versus the batshit insane level that we are currently at with this show. But it's consistently at that level. So those things will still stick out. I think those things will still be fun and wild and crazy, and you'll still have a Edgar Edgardever in a Evil Knievel suit flying away on a rocket, but then you'll also have heartfelt talks at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's just such a pleasure to be in the middle of this event.
Yeah. Before we start to wrap up here, any other moments that you want to talk about in this episode? Anything you want to call out in particular?
I have one. So in Betty's storyline, when she's talking to her dad in hell, asks the question that only he knows the answer to. Do you remember what the answer to it was?
Was it Charleston cheese on Route 18 or something like that?
I thought she said Chowsy Cheddars.
It might be Chowsy Cheddars.
Honestly, I was like, what was that word? Those words? And then she, it's just such a funny thing in this like high drama moment where she's like, the devil's real. My father's in hell. What am I going to do? And he's like, Chowsy Cheddars on Route 18. I was like, that's, oh, that's the reference. I don't know. I don't know what that is. I don't know what those words mean. Is that a real
assumed,
place?
I took it as it's the River Vale version of Chuck E. Cheese is where he used to take her for her birthday.
Yes.
I'd like
but
to talk.
Chowsy Cheddars is definitely weird. It definitely threw me as well.
I want to talk about, you know, my favorite moment where it's Jughead working on his typewriter, pretending to type as Tabitha's coming in the door. And then he was like, hey, how was your day? Oh, you know, the devil stopped by, you know. And then Jughead's first thing was like, oh, you think I can meet him? Is it cool if I meet him? You know, just like the unbelievable Jughead being like, I want to sit down with the, talk with the devil too.
It's the ultimate writer move to bail on doing actual work and be like, hey, can I meet the devil and maybe get a leg up on the business and not have to write right now? It was very true. I mean, this whole episode was sort of, it felt like it was about creativity and how we all want shortcuts to get around having to work. And I think that's a fun theme for a television show to be about.
The other thing that was interesting while we're talking about overall theme is how everybody was making these not small deals, but like not the biggest deals you possibly can. Nobody was asking for all the world's riches or to be a king or anything like that. Reggie just got a little bit of money to finish their casino and sold Veronica's soul for that. Jughead, same thing with the interview that he was going to publish in his school newspaper. Like, that's not the biggest thing in the world. And the one that really jumped out to me was when Finn comes in and tells Kevin, you're going to head off on a 6-week run of The Boy from Oz opposite Hugh Jackman. I was like, who else is in The Boy from Oz?
Yeah.
Hugh Jackman is the only one that matters. You're not even the second lead. You're like part of the ensemble, probably.
It's crazy to make a deal with the devil and still be working underneath Hugh Jackman. Like, maybe you should take over, Boy from Oz. Kick Jackman to the curb.
Be Hugh Jackman.
Come on. You would want to be in a play with Hugh Jackman.
Yes. I'm going to sell my soul.
I think
to do
I've always found
show.
Him to be too tall. He's too tall.
You're right.
I'm going to sell my show to do a show at Stand Up New York. A bringer show.
Oh, yeah. I've done too many of those. You don't need to do any more of those.
Yeah. One drink minimum. I'll sell myself for a 1-drink minimum instead of a 2-drink minimum.
Oh, yeah. Man. My friends aren't drinking as much these days. I want to help them out when I bring them in. That was very fun.
All right. Before we wrap up here, why don't we choose the MVP of the episode? Justin, why don't you go first? Who is your MVP this week?
I never go first. I got to give it up for Veronica. I thought in a show where, like you were just saying, Alex, in a show where all the characters get to be dumb and make stupid deals with the devil and like be themselves, they feel very real. She gets to be the absolute boss of bosses, beats the devil in this episode, figures everything out, and still also does a 1-hour-long dance number that didn't seem important to her trick for the devil, by the way.
she
didn't have to
do
that song.
She was going to die at the stroke of midnight. She wanted to go out, you know, at the end of her number. That's how she wants to die.
The way she set it up was like, ooh, yes, tell Kevin he has to sit because I'm going to do this song and trick the devil. And she was like, no, I'm going to trick the devil and then unrelated do a song. So shouts to her. She's the queen, and it's great. Great episode for her.
Pete, what about you? Who's your MVP this episode?
Well, you know, I want to say Toffee because it's the elephant in the room that's getting bigger and bigger with each episode.
Sorry, it's the cat in the briefcase, I think what you meant to say.
Not the briefcase that you're making. That's not big enough for animals. That's a horrible. I'm talking about, of course, Betty, who we got to see kind of lose it. And, you know, it's hard to see her broken like that. But even when she's doing it, it's unbelievable.
So I'll give it up to Tabitha this episode. I thought this was a really good one with her. And like I mentioned, I just want to see her in more storylines where she's doing her own thing or leading the storyline. And that's what we got here. I thought this was really nice and one of my favorite Tabitha episodes so far. And folks, that is it. If you'd like to support this show and other shows, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Riverdale or Rivervale. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Riverdale Dark on Twitter, at Riverdale After on Instagram, Riverdale After Dark on Facebook, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. Until next time, we'll see you after dark.
That's fun.
You got me wanting.